Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Tarot of Empowerment Radio, where you can obtain tools to live to your highest potential with Judith Sult, who has over 30 years as an intuitive tarot reader, teacher, and healer.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to our show today's show of Tarot Empowerment, and I need to close off my computer here. I apologize. I'm very excited today to have as my special guest Cindy Sheldon, a Gestalt therapist, and she's going to be talking about Gestalt, how we get in our own way, and how to get out of our own way. And then we're going to talk about how Gestalt therapy and tarot kind of interact and combine in various ways. I'm not going to introduce any new cards from Tarot of Empowerment, the deck, this week, but you are welcome to go to our website, tarotofempowerment.com, and look at our new cards there. We have some new cards, and we're getting new ones up every couple of weeks, so I certainly invite you to go there. I'm co-creating the deck with Gordana Kurgis. And I'm sure that a discussion of our cards will come up in the course of the show. We're also not going to be able be doing tarot readings today. But if you do have questions about what Cindy and I are talking about, you're more than welcome to call with questions about that. We'd rather take those calls about questions rather than doing the readings today. So I hope you understand. For those of you who did call and requested a reading, if you email me at tarotofempowerment@gmail.com with a quick question, I will email you an answer as a thank you for your patience in calling into the show. So hopefully you'll still get an answer that you were looking for. My guest today is author, Gestalt therapist, and teacher Cindy Sheldon. In the 1960s, Cindy was in the first wave of people to study Gestalt therapy from the founder, Fritz Perls, and his colleague, Jim Simpkin. Cindy founded the Gestalt Institute of San Francisco in 1967, where she taught until 1990. In the 1990s, she moved to Arizona Spiritual Center, Sedona, and the Navajo Nation, where she worked at the Indian Health Center. Cindy helped bring Navajo culture back to the people through traditional wellness conferences, and she promoted the hiring of medicine men and women at the health centers and created opportunities for Navajo elders to feel useful to one another and the younger generations. Cindy discovered that some of the Navajo philosophy is similar to that of the Gestalt therapy theory. She moved to Bellingham in 2006, where she is based for teaching and counseling. Cindy often recommends that her clients get esoteric readings like tarot, astrology, auras, or whatever. She is also the coordinator of BIONS, that is Bellingham Institute for Noetic Sciences in Bellingham. So if you're interested in getting information about BIONS, you can contact her. Cindy's website is Cindy, C-Y-N-D-Y, Sheldon, sheldon.com. That's cindysheldon.com. And if you do have questions for our guest or for me about this program and about what we're talking about, you're welcome to call 347-205-9869. Welcome, Cindy. And how are you doing today?
Just fine, thank you.
Okay. Can you give us an overview of what Gestalt therapy is?
Well, that might take me 6 hours, but I'll give it a stab. Thank you for inviting me, Judith. I'm really happy to be here. Gestalt therapy was founded in the 40s or 50s by two European German Jewish couple, Fritz and Laura Perls. And they were bringing something quite new to the whole field of psychology at that time, which was pretty much taken over by the psychoanalysts, the Freudians, in Europe at that time, and to some extent in this country too. But there were other forms emerging. And Gestalt began to become quite popular in the 60s and became part of what has been referred to as the human potential movement.
I like that.
Yeah.
Human potential. It's got a nice ring to it.
Right. And the headquarters was at Esalen Institute in Big Sur, California, where I went back in the 60s, 50 years ago, to learn how to do Gestalt therapy from Fritz Perls. And there was a lot of energy and excitement about this new way of working, because we involved so much more than just our minds. And psychology up until that point had been pretty much only dedicated to looking at what we thought.
Uh-huh.
And not that it ignored feelings, but there's so much more that goes on in terms of what we look at. For example, I don't know if you want me to go into this more now or...
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay. Body work, we often refer to. I don't particularly like that phrase, but we pay a lot of attention to body language.
Okay.
In fact, I even encourage people to watch a sitcom on TV and turn the sound off.
Uh-huh.
So they can see the body language between people role-playing a couple, for example, or a family.
Uh-huh.
And because the way we move our bodies, we're constantly sending communications to the people around us. Not that they receive what we think we're sending.
Right.
But
right.
We use our bodies a lot to communicate. And oftentimes we have developed particular body tensions and to protect ourselves. For example, we might not look at somebody. We might have been... Something might have happened to us when we were young, and so we're afraid to look at people. Or maybe we have a twitch in our shoulder, and that could, if you explore it, lead to that they maybe got hit a lot in that shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
So all kinds of things. If somebody's stomach is rumbling, and the person thinks they're hungry, but maybe by exploring it more fully, we might find out that it's something else.
Okay.
So we use body language a lot.
I think it's interesting. I hadn't thought before about the Freudian being more about what you're thinking about. When I studied psychology, and I did study some Gestalt, and so much of it is about how we feel, and so going back to how we think, it's almost so foreign that it's hard for me to get my mind around it, that the psychology would be thinking rather than feeling.
Well, the truth of the matter is that a lot of our feelings are based on our thoughts.
Okay.
So we really have to go to the thinking also, and Gestalt people... Even though Fritz Perls once made a statement, lose your mind and come to your senses.
Uh-huh.
That was one of his favorite lines.
Lose your mind and come to your senses.
Right. And that was sort of the mantra in the early days. And so how we think is very, very important to understand and explore, not what we think.
Right.
Because in the old days, you know, people like the Freud and all of his colleagues and different other theorists developed theories as to why we behave, W-H-Y, why.
Oh, that's right, of course.
Yeah. And Gestalt people don't like the word why. We want to know how. We want to know, how do I stop myself from being more alive? How do I stop myself from making good connections with people?
Okay. And not the why.
Correct.
Okay.
So the why takes us right up into our
right,
head.
Right, right, right. Mm-hmm. I hadn't thought about that. That's a good point. So that would explain the difference between the Freudian and the Gestalt. What about some of the other theories or psychological approaches?
Well, see, now we're, 50 years down the pike when, from the 60s, when a lot of these theories were coming into the foreground that were part of the human potential movement. Carl Rogers, Abraham Maslow,
mm-hmm.
some of those people. And since then, there have been a number of approaches that have been developed, a lot of them around relationships and family therapy, and then a lot of interest in the spiritual practices like Buddhism that have combined with certain psychological practices like mindfulness and so forth. So there are tons of new kinds of ways of working. And a lot of the Gestalt ideas have been adopted by some of these other approaches. A key part of all this is that we try to work in the here and now as much as possible.
We, the Gestalt therapists.
Yeah.
Right.
So if somebody comes to me and said they had a dream, and they start to tell me the dream in the past tense, I ask them to tell it to me as if it were happening right now.
Okay.
Or if they come in with about an argument they had with their partner last night, and they tell it in the past tense, I'll say, well, let's relive it, but tell it to me in the present.
Uh-huh.
Because by making it present, the person's whole body gets involved. And then you get into the body language and the emotions and the whole nine yards.
You're right there. You're right here. Wow.
And a lot of theories don't deal in the here and now as much as we do, for example.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. You wrote a delightful book, Gestalt as a Way of Life. I really recommend this to those of you that may be interested in knowing more about this. This is not a psychology textbook. I don't think you would claim that, although
no.
It's one that could definitely be used in a class for a background. And what do you think our listeners could get out of reading your book?
I think that, first let me tell you how the book came about. I've been doing and teaching Gestalt therapy for 50 years, and over the years, some of the practices that I learned from Fritz and other people were here and now experiences in the class, like imagining, sometimes it was through our imagination, sometimes it was like a guided fantasy, and sometimes it was paying attention to body language. Whatever it was, I call these basic experiential exercises, I call these the Gestalt awareness practices. And we try to teach all these to our trainees over the years, and it's separate in a way from the therapy, or at least I've tried to delineate them, because my belief has been that the public could really benefit knowing these practices without having to be in therapy. And what's happened is it's only the people who've been in therapy or who've trained as a Gestalt therapist that know anything about these practices.
Okay.
So this is a way of getting it out to the public.
And letting the person who's wanting to make some changes in their life take control of it, is that?
Well, you could look at it that way. I see this as a manual. It's kind of like a manual of the practices. So there are exercises in there. There are cartoons in there. There are quotes from other fields,
mm-hmm.
related
mm-hmm.
fields like Buddhism and Navajo
and
people.
And Alice in Wonderland.
And Alice in Wonderland. Right. And so those quotes can help a person really have fun with some of the chapters and get into some of the practices without too much difficulty. And it's the goals of the book, as well as Gestalt therapy, are to help people become more alive, more aware, more in contact with themselves and others, more congruent, which means more aligned,
okay,
with themselves, and the last one is more creative.
Okay.
Which is really the word that the founders use to cover everything intuitive and spiritual and so forth, although they didn't use the word spiritual. But I really do see these practices as part of a spiritual process for people.
Yes, that was one of the things that attracted me both to the book and in having further conversations with you. The book has various practices, and then at the end of each, so in I'm going to go down with the various sections. There's awareness, growing up, get out of your head, authenticity, and we talk a lot about authenticity in the spiritual realm. The magic and sacred in Gestalt, and the final thoughts are the sections of the books. And what I like about this, it's not, it's about 120 pages, and there are exercises at the end of each of these sections, as Cindy's introducing some of the things, so that you can actually experience what, instead of just reading it and going, there's actually that experience that you have to go with it. So it's a delightful book. And again, you can get that on Cindy's website, cindysheldon.com, and you can also order it on amazon.com. When we were preparing for the show the other day and had a nice visit, and we had an interesting discussion around the word empowerment, because my deck, of course, being the Tarot of Empowerment, and that's kind of the center of what I like to think about in terms of what the purpose of tarot is, a tool to help someone discover empowerment. And I posted on Facebook something, I don't remember what, and the person emailed back a little hostile and said, tarot, the cards can never empower me. And they're right, they can't. But they can be a tool of empowerment. But tell me what you think about the word empowerment. That was a fun conversation.
Right, I don't remember all the details of what we said, but I thought of something else when I just now about the word. That, like many words we use, I find it somewhat limiting.
Uh-huh.
Empowerment is one part of our development or our transformation. But I like to look at the work as becoming more of who we are. You know,
okay.
Which would be more empowered, more alive, more aware, more curious, more whatever. You know, that it's So I see the word as somewhat limiting, even though it's an extremely important idea that people become more in tune with their own power, even though we talked about not particularly liking that word.
Right.
Power
right.
in there.
That word power can, I think, sometimes mislead people from understanding that empowerment is power of and by oneself, for oneself. And sometimes because of that, those little five letters there in the middle, they think that it's power over another.
Right, right.
And that is definitely not so, and that is not the tool that I want people to use
right.
the tarot cards for.
Right.
Yes, yeah.
It's so interesting because looking at the words, and this is where as a Gestalt therapist, people think I'm not interested in words, because it's too much using thinking, but I am. I'm very interested in how people use words to limit themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that we make up a theory about ourselves or a story about ourselves with these words. And we make up images about who we are.
So give us an example of that.
Somebody might say, I'm a really good person.
Mm-hmm.
Using those words, I'm a good person. And so they try to live their life about what that means to them. But it's a very limiting notion because they're a lot more than a good person.
Mm.
You know, they're maybe a creative person. They may be a very emotional person. They may be a very adventurous person, and on and on and on. And so... I look for how people use language to limit who they are.
I see. I'm sitting here shuffling through my deck in the tarot. The Temperance card is one of the cards that we have there that is honoring, it's about bringing balance and honoring the many aspects of self.
Great.
And that reminds me of what you're saying.
Right,
there.
Exactly. Right. And the other part of empowerment is trying to look at myself or another person not as somebody separate, like empowering a person, period. It's the person is in a context. The person is in the world. The person is in the community to a little or great extent. So it's like the relationship of the person to their environment is really something we also honor and look at because one doesn't exist really without the other.
Mm-hmm.
So in some situations, and I think I told you the other day how much I like the I Ching.
Yes.
The I Ching says a number of wonderful things, one of which is, now is not the time to challenge whoever in your life, you know. So it'll come up with something like that. So you, and somebody might say, well, you have to become empowered and confront them. But, you know, what the I Ching is doing is honoring the background, honoring what's going on in the community, and saying this may not be the good time to do that.
But I look at that as a form of empowerment.
Oh, good.
Knowing that it's time to step back. Again, if
right.
you look at the tarot and you see the hanged man
right.
or the hanged one come up, he's hanging around. He's getting a different perspective. This is not the time for action.
Right.
This is the time to turn yourself inside out and upside down
right.
to get a new perspective and not act.
Great.
And patience for a lot of us type A personalities
right.
requires a lot of empowerment to be able to say, okay, I'll wait on this.
Right.
I'd really kind of like to take action or
get things done.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's interesting that we aren't as far apart with the words. And I also understand that you are that you look at words themselves as being limiting. And I, as I recall, in I can't remember if it was in the book, something that I read when we were talking is that the Gestalt is more than the sum of its parts.
Well, that's what the German word superficially Gestalt means, that the whole is greater than the sum of its parts.
Right. And so every time you have a word, you really have a part. You don't have the total, and you can't see it all.
Yeah, that's very possible. One of the exercises I like to do in my classes is that I have people go on a fantasy trip and imagine that they're infants and they haven't learned language yet.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if I shared this with you. And they're sitting out on in a garden and observing what's going on and experiencing what's going on, but they don't have any words. And then the next part of the exercise is to have an adult, like a parent, come and sit next to them observing the garden and begin to teach them words. And for them to talk about, after they do that for a few minutes, to come back and talk about what that was like for them. And I've gotten so many interesting responses from that exercise.
And do people, well, what are some of
some responses
that you get?
All different kinds of things. Some people say that they felt the words were limiting.
Uh-huh.
Other people liked having words to identify, you know, butterfly, sun, so forth and so on. One person said their whole attention went away from the garden and they were into trying to please the parent.
Uh-huh.
So everything really shifted.
Uh-huh.
So it's been an interesting little research project I've been doing.
Yeah. When you gave me that example and I was thinking about it later, and I thought, I wonder how that then impacts as we are teaching language to children. And you see these kids that sometimes are 2 or 3 or 4 years old and aren't speaking. And if for them, they feel like the words end up limiting them.
I didn't know that.
I don't know.
Oh,
I wonder.
Yeah, right.
I wonder if that's one of the reasons why they don't use language, because they're perhaps more sensory.
Right. Well, one of the interesting things that I discovered working on the Navajo reservation with the medicine people is that a medicine man is not allowed to go to school until they're older.
Like older, how old?
I've forgotten exactly what age they can start going to school. The medicine man that worked at the clinic where I was working, he went to first grade at age 13.
Oh, wow.
And so children who parents thought would be good medicine men and women were kept hidden from the authorities who tried to take the Navajo kids away and put them in boarding schools at age 5. And I know another Navajo man who's a social worker who said his parents wanted him to be medicine man. They thought he'd be good, but they didn't hide him from the authorities, and so he went to first grade and went through the regular Western type schools that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And by teaching kids all that kind of language and thinking at that age gets in the way of developing their intuition. And that's why they want to protect the medicine people from having that interference at such a young age.
Do you think that education is good for young people?
Well, I have a lot of questions about it, our education. And I'm much more interested in the things like Waldorf School and Montessori School that use develop the intuitive side more than the public school system.
Right. Interesting. You said you sometimes recommend that your clients get tarot or astrology reading, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do with that information when you have it?
Well, I don't often necessarily recommend it. They often come and tell me they just had a reading.
Okay.
You know, so it goes both ways.
Uh-huh.
And but I have definitely encouraged people who I knew were open to this kind of possibility and opportunity. I encourage it. I said, and if you tape it, I'll listen to the tapes and we'll use it in the session. So that's what we do. And just intuitively see what comes up as a result of my listening to the tape and their experience of how it relates to what they've been working on in therapy with me.
I've worked with a psychologist before, and he would sometimes bring clients to me that were stuck, that just couldn't find the essence of what the problem was. And actually, essence is another Gestalt word, isn't it?
Well, it's my word. I don't know how many other Gestalt people use it.
Okay. So I read it in your famous book.
In my book.
Famous Gestalt book. And by getting the reading, and he would say, I don't know if you believe in this or not, but it gives us a basis of a conversation. And so I can see how you could use some of that as additional information.
Absolutely. Sometimes it gets to the core issue, as you say. This man, the psychologist, wanted you to help him get to the core issue with the client.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what every therapist is trying to do. And sometimes they can't. And I feel like most Gestalt therapists can do that because we've been trained to go with a lot of different techniques to get a client to go deep inside.
Mm-hmm.
Where other forms of therapy just don't have that many tools.
Because they're more in the
They're more
brain.
Theoretical.
Yeah,
exactly. And so a lot of therapists want to come and learn our tools without becoming Gestalt therapists. Well, anyway, that's another story.
Well, that's okay. A lot of people want to come to me for the tarot tools, but they don't.
Yeah.
They won't read tarot. Yeah.
Right.
And that's good.
Right.
Yeah.
So getting to the heart of the matter, and another piece of that from my point of view, when you're talking about authenticity, is that it's my experience and many therapists' experience, regardless of their orientation, that many clients, many people who seek therapy, and many people in general, don't know how to tell themselves their own truth.
I agree.
Because of the way we've been raised, the school system, whatever, we're not taught how to tell the truth about our psychological being. Now, I don't mean, you know, whether I stole candy from my neighbor or not, but when I was five, but that too. But it's more being curious and interested enough in who I am.
Mm-hmm.
To be able to acknowledge if I hurt somebody, for example,
and carried that guilt around, perhaps you mean, or
then I'm more likely to be able to go work on that if I am carrying guilt around.
Right.
But if I deny the truth, it's going to go inside me and get stuck somewhere until a tarot reader comes along and exposes it. Or somebody, you know, in some other way, it gets exposed.
It's interesting how often I'll have a card come up, and there is one card, the Five of Water, I refer to as the Wish I Woulda, Coulda card. and there are three cups that are spilled over. And almost all the time when that card comes up, people will say, they'll either know immediately, yes, I know exactly what that is, or else they'll go into, no, I don't think so. There isn't anything that I'm regretting, that I'm feeling bitter about, and that's where I describe it. It's a wish I woulda, coulda, and it means that you're kind of stuck in this place of being bitter and regretful. And there are two cups that are upright. So when they get the card and they're going through the denial about the three cards that are spilled over, and then when I point out, but there are these three cups that are upright, so many times they can say, well, then that means I can do such and so, and they begin to acknowledge what the bitterness was about,
right,
or what the regret was about.
Right.
Regret may be a better word.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's an interesting way of doing it. Now, do you do astrology or tarot yourself?
I used to play around with both of them, and I still do. I often ask people when their birthday is.
And do you then do numerology or tarot? I mean astrology.
Yeah. I have this big book, which is, I'm not a professional astrologist in any way, shape, or form, but I have this book, which you may have seen, that has two pages for every day of the year about a person. So you can read...
The birthday book?
Yeah.
Yes, I have that.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so I sometimes encourage people to look at that and say, do you identify with this at all?
Uh-huh.
And so it depends on the person.
Right.
But I like to encourage them to be interested in some of these other ways of learning about themselves.
Right.
Other ways of knowing.
Right, right, yes. Yeah, I love that. That's what I love about the tarot, what it reveals, and how often a card will come up that I think to myself when I'm asking the question, I can't imagine what card would answer that question. And then when it comes up, it's, of course.
Right.
I believe we have a gentleman that is waiting to ask us a question. Janet, do we have him there?
Hello?
Hello? Is this
Hi.
Greg?
Yeah, hi. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Greg?
Oh, pretty good, I guess. My question was probably even more than a few years ago, I decided to do more meditative work for personal growth rather than being in any kind of a religious structure or anything like that. I tried to do a lot of everything from cord cutting, meditation, creating your own space, lucid dreaming. All that kind of stuff. And the problem was I was getting a lot of knowledge, like, from other places. And whenever I really did some meditation on what happened, I had this dream like I was, I guess, ascending, but yet after, it'd be like you're floating up in the spirit, trying to go higher, and I was getting pulled into, it looked like, other households. And I was feeling a lot of the burdens, things that were going on in these different groups and households that I wasn't even physically involved with.
So if I'm understanding this correctly, you would go on in a spiritual, almost like an astral journey and end up in other people's lives. Is that correct?
Yes. Even though I'd be doing guided meditations to go deeper in myself or to create my own spiritual room, which was one of my goals.
Uh-huh.
Just have this place where, sure, you can help other people, but I'd rather start out in my own creative space. Okay. And anyway, as time went on, as I was like trying to create my own space, I would be a little bit angry towards incoming energies and messages, you know, that were coming in from other places. And what happened was I'd feel, when I tried to ignore them and go into my own space, I'd feel like some burning in like my chest or solar plexus areas.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So I figured after a lot of time of trying to struggle against it, I figured I'd do a complete turnaround and see how it went. So I started to meditate on just a very big list of people to they'd be filled with the white light, healed, all this kind of stuff. And I got some good feedback for the first couple weeks. And I thought I got a release from that, yeah.
Okay.
But then it's kind of happening again. I tried that a month ago, and now whenever I figured maybe I've settled that argument and I can go back into my own space, I'm still feeling like a lot of angry energy. I don't know if it's like we're all in this together, you can't go in your own space, or, you know.
Well, So, to summarize, is your question how to release the anger or how to do your own growth more? What?
Yeah, I'd really like to do my own growth, you know, and really control, you know, the incoming and outgoing messages instead of being like, pulled into these other situations. Like, I have no problem with, let's say I pick a day to meditate on something. I'd like to go to that place, and then maybe at the end of the week, meditate on healing and releasing other people that are in need.
Okay.
Rather than have it be uncontrollable.
Let Cindy and I take a minute to talk about your question. And I'm glad you brought us back to this in a way, because what we called this show was How Do I Get Out of My Own Way? And so this is a perfect example of you inadvertently getting in your own way. So Cindy, do you want to address this first, and then I will. I'm getting an echo here, Janet. I'm not sure. Okay, go ahead.
Hello, are you there, Greg?
Yeah, I'm here.
Greg, are you there?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm very interested in what you're talking about, Greg, and I don't know whether or not you've had an opportunity to talk to some people in person about it. I'm remembering a very good friend of mine who's a well-known psychic in California many years ago, and she used to talk about how she had to learn how to be in charge of all the messages she got from other places, and that she'd get these messages in the middle of the night or when she was doing something with friends, and so she had to really take charge. And I was in a class with her teaching us how to become more psychic, and she would just talk to these energies, and sometimes in an angry way, because if she was angry, and sometimes in encouraging them to leave her, not encouraging them, but demanding that they leave her alone or to be only available when she called on them. I don't know if that kind of, sounds like you've been doing some of that and they're still hanging around.
Yeah, it's like if I change my meditations, sometimes that'll help for a day or two.
Yeah.
But it seems like they readjust, you know, like...
they find a new way to get to you, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Like if I talk to somebody, like since I'm talking to you girls tonight, most likely there's a good chance that just that agreement will help me for the next couple of days.
Right.
But it seems like when I started to meditate on why it was happening, one of the messages came back that it was just like there was a lot of people that kind of bound themselves together, and they're creating an energy field like everybody should do that.
Right.
At one point when I was doing this for myself, one of the meditations I used was, like that I was being uncrossed, like washing my clothes and everything with soap, and I had this vision that it was like these two women were stuck together, their hair was entangled together. And then I would have dreams that there were people that were like plastered together, and you almost had to pull them apart, okay? And like that was happening a lot. I kept having dreams about a group of people in a very tightly enclosed workspace, almost like working on top of each other. So it seems like that maybe that's in the atmosphere locally, and it's creating.
One of the things that you might consider doing is looking at other kinds of psychic development other than meditation. And I just pulled the Seven of Water in a reverse position for you, which is about insight and gaining more insight. And it could be that you explore how to develop particular psychic gifts. And it could be that you have strong psychic gifts and you don't know, they're wanting to come to the forefront and you're getting in your own way to have that develop. So if this continues to happen with meditation, try something other than meditation.
Okay.
Okay? the producer wants to know what sign you are.
Gemini. I was born on May 27th.
Okay. That's all about communication. And it could be also that you're a healer and you're denying your healing abilities for others. So I would explore what the anger is about and suggest that you look at that some. It sounds like you're being thwarted in what it is that you want to do, which is to meditate for your own spiritual growth.
Yeah.
But one thing about angels and guides that I've discovered is sometimes when you ask for the gift, I want to have my own spiritual growth, it very often looks very different when it comes than what you expect it to.
Okay.
And
yeah.
That may very well be what's going on with you, that it's so accept it for a while. And talk to your angels and guides and ask them to please work within certain boundaries, and that when you want to extricate yourself from the situation, that you will extricate yourself. If they know that you're talking to them,
okay,
they'll be less likely to force your hand.
I've had done a lot of healing work with people in the past, a long time ago, but I kind of got pushed out of those situations. And it seems like a lot of the groups that I worked with were kind of controlling, and it's like I'm getting feedback, but yet at the same time, a lot of people really aren't allowed to do a lot of that kind of work. It's not really welcomed. So I think that's the conflict.
That could certainly be the conflict.
Let me ask you a question, Greg. Have you ever read any of Robert Monroe's books?
Robert Monroe.
It's M-U-N-R-O.
No, M-O.
Oh, that's right. Monroe,
is that the guy from the Monroe Institute?
Yeah.
I have some of their stuff.
Okay. I knew him years ago, and his books about going out of body every day and meeting these entities on all different kinds are just fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, I've had a lot of those experiences. It's just, getting control.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for calling, and I want to have a few more questions for Cindy here. I think it's fair to say that we both want people to reach their highest potential. Would you agree? And how do you see tarot and the difference between tarot and gestalt, other than the fact that you've got a different form of education? My higher degree is not in tarot, it is in another area. How do you see their goals being the same or different?
I'm not sure I can answer that, Judith, because I don't feel I know the tarot well enough.
Okay.
I'm not even sure I would say the goal is for people to reach their highest potential. I'm much more into not judging high or low, but people being interested and curious in knowing themselves and the world better and the universe. Developing a curiosity and a fascination with how we tick.
Without judgment.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And
without trying
to be better than others or higher or lower, because that sets up an expectation.
Okay.
For many people, and then all kinds of crazy things happen when people can't fulfill their expectations.
When I use the term highest potential, I'm talking about a person within them, own selves, living consciously and aware, and in that way, not competing with my intention.
No, I know.
Not
I know you're
competing
not.
With
yeah.
others.
But even competing with themselves, you know, there's this, oh, I'm not high enough, I'm not doing it right.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm so tuned into that dilemma, because I end up getting the fallout in my office with people saying, I know I can do better.
I just don't, yeah. Okay.
So
yeah.
I'm overly sensitive to that.
That makes sense. How do you deal with people that are lost? They want to change their jobs, or they want to attract a mate, or they want to do something big change in their life. Where do you start with someone like that?
Well, the first place I start with is making contact with the person, sitting with them, being present with them in the present,
okay.
in the here and now, and just getting to know them and having them, in a way, get to know me.
Mm-hmm.
Without trying to go solve problems right away.
Okay.
And it's through that ability to be present with one another that things will emerge that will always be related to their concerns.
Right.
So it's a very individualized, intuitive kind of approach. So I can't be so general about that. If somebody, eventually we get to career or jobs or whatever, I might have them put one job on one chair and another job on another and another job on the other, and then I have them go sit in the chair.
Oh, interesting.
And experience and imagine that they're in the present at that job.
Uh-huh.
And experience what it feels like, even though they may not know all the intricacies of it, they won't know what their boss is like and so forth. And to do that, and to not just try to do it in their mind.
Right, but actually physically get up and move over there and sit here and sit
right.
there and
right.
something like that.
Yeah,
I see that. You are also the coordinator of Bions. Tell us what Bions is
okay.
in the next few minutes that we have left
sure.
here.
Bellingham Institute of Noetic Sciences is a community group loosely connected to the Institute of Noetic Sciences, which was started in the 70s by an astronaut, Edgar Mitchell, who was one of the ones who went to the moon.
Mm.
And he was a left-brain scientist from MIT who didn't have apparently a spiritual bone in his body until he went out there in space and on the way back had a profound spiritual experience looking at this planet from out there.
Mm. Gives me chills thinking about it.
I know. And he came back, became dedicated to the idea of bringing the whole world of physical, of spirituality and metaphysics together with science.
Wow.
And so this organization, whose headquarters are in Petaluma, California,
mm-hmm.
has been going since the early 70s. And Bellingham has had a community group for something like 30 years.
Wow.
So I'm just, at the tail end. I've just been here for a few years. And so we put on a program once a month during the school year, September to June, at the third Thursday of every month in the evening at the Fairhaven Library. And we have all kinds of different programs. We have movies about spiritual things and metaphysical things. We have presenters showing their approaches to things, and we even had a political activist come last month, talked about nonviolent political activism as a spiritual approach.
Uh-huh.
And we have healers. We're going to show a movie in September. We're going to do I can't remember the word now, when somebody's taking a new movie out and showing it.
Preview?
Yeah. Tom Kenyon. Have you ever heard of Tom Kenyon?
I have. Remind me.
Well,
where
Tom Kenyon is an amazing man. He lives on Orcas, and I've taken workshops with him in Sedona and in Seattle, and he uses sound, he channels the Hathors from Egypt, from another time.
Uh-huh.
And he works with sound, and he has a four-octave range.
Wow.
And
wow.
Incredible, intuitive sounds that he brings in whatever. And he's recently had a movie made of his work.
Is there a website where people can go to see what's going on?
Bellingham Ions?
Mm-hmm.
It's called Bellingham Ions, all one word, bellinghamions.blogspot.com.
Okay. And they will be able to see upcoming events and
right.
That kind of...
We don't have anything up there for September yet. It'll go up soon. But you can look in the archives and see all the kinds of programs we've had. It's by donation, and no one will be turned away.
Great. Do you have any classes coming up?
November 8th, I'm planning on doing a class here in Bellingham at my home, which will be based on my book. We'll be doing a lot of different exercises. And then I'll probably have an ongoing class for those who would like to do a little more than the day-long, like twice a month.
Okay.
In an evening.
Okay, great.
But they can check my website. You can all check my website.
And remember
in a couple of months.
Cindy Sheldon, CYNDYSHELDON, CindySheldon.com. And you can contact her if you would like to have her as a therapist. If you want to take a class or if you want to buy her book, Gestalt as a Way of Life. And again, her book is also available at Amazon.com. If you want a reading from me, you can contact me, tarotofempowerment@gmail.com, and we can set up a time. I read by phone, by Skype, or in person. And you can also sign up there for my newsletter. So thank you so much for tuning in, and have a great couple of weeks. I'll be sending out my information on my next guest. That will be the first Wednesday in August already. So thank you very much, folks, and have a great couple of weeks. Good night.
Thank you for listening to Tarot of Empowerment. If you would like a tarot reading from Judith Salt, or if you have suggestions for a future show, contact Judith at judithsalt.com. That's Judith, J-U-D-Y-T-H, at Judith Salt, S as in Sam, U-L-T as in Tom, .com.